howls over a post-apocalyptic hellscape inhabited by mutos, dregs, primords. Field Major Steyr of the Sontaran Empire and the bandaged-faced traffic warden from Threads. You shelter below ground, waiting for rad levels to drop to safe levels. Alone, with nothing more than minimal food rations. And somewhat improbably, 5 stories from the Doctor Who universe in any medium. TV, audio, film, novel, comic book. These artifacts, they'll be your only link to the past. Maybe for the rest of your life. Welcome to The Bunker, a Doctor Who podcast from Cutaway Comics. Brought to you by Bumalam Productions. And now, here's your host, Ian Winterton.
Waiting out the apocalypse today is Will Maddox, a well-known name in Doctor Who fandom. As a member of the Who Universals, he creates Doctor Who themed videos and animations. His latest fantastic project shows the first meeting of the Doctor and a Brigadier during the events of the Web of Fear, an event not shown in the TV story, but depicted in the novelisation. Will, welcome to the bunker.
Good to meet you. It's exciting because I'm interviewing somebody I've never actually genuinely met before. Recommended by the lovely Jenny, who I also have never met in real life, another person who exists out there on Twitter. You come highly recommended. You have a YouTube channel, is that correct?
Yes, I do. I have my own channel, yes, called Maddox Productions One, where I mostly specialize in animation because that's my biggest passion. That's my biggest pastime. I'm also a member of another channel called The Hooniversals, which I collaborate with currently 5 other members. Mm. So, and over there, we do like Doctor Who discussions, think pieces, reviews, all that stuff. So yeah, I have a YouTube presence.
No, I've seen your name many times. I think a lot since I've been following Jenny, who's brilliant on Twitter.
Oh yeah, Jenny loves me. So
even though I like to tease her appalling taste in Doctor Who. But I'll get her on here one day, me and her can really, really have a spirited debate about dimensions in time.
Yeah.
but Doctor Who, so many different things to so many different people. That's why it's such a wonderful show. I mean, you don't have to say exactly your age, but are you in your early 20s?
I am 24 currently. 24 and a half, I guess. Oh my God. Very specific.
Yeah. I'm more than twice your age. And here we are talking about a show which is about to be 60 years old. And a lot of your choices are older than me. In fact, all of them, apart from one, are older than me. So what a mad little cult Doctor Who is. But so usually I can put these people's choices sort of into order of like, oh, well, that's probably the one they remember from being a kid. That's probably... And when you get to somebody of your generation, it's like, why? There's a lot of black and white Doctor Who on your list.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. There's no new Who. So I guess what's your origin story when it comes to this crazy show?
How did you
get into Doctor Who?
I think I started watching... It's weird because I didn't join from like day one of the revival like a lot of people my age did. I think I caught like little clips here and there from like series 2 as it was coming out. But what really started it was I was at extended family's house sometime, and I think we were having a takeaway or something, and my cousin, who was a Doctor Who fan before me, he had, it was either a repeat or like a DVD of Rose, you know, the first episode of the revival, and he just stuck that on. Mm-hmm. Over a takeaway, and we watched that, and I think it got to the bit where like Mickey's eaten by the bin. I'm pretty sure that's the point where I was like, okay, I guess I'm on board with this franchise now. And
Yeah, I just... a lot of old people went no, turned off.
and from then on, like I was interested. I watched almost all of series three as it came out, and then my dad, he sells a lot of secondhand home media, and among them were some. This was like back in the day, like 2007, 2008. He was selling some VHS tapes of Classic Who, and you know there was some Hartnells, some Troughtons, Peter Davisons. So I got to watch a bit of the original Dalek story. I got to watch like Revenge of the Cybermen, Pyramids of Mars, Tomb of the Cybermen, Robots of Death. But my first Classic Who story was Resurrection of the Daleks, and that was my window into Classic Who, basically.
I love it.
And
wow, and watching them on VHS as God intended.
Yes. And that was really good because around the same time
DVD and streaming them.
Yeah, and around the same time it was like a really good one to watch because around the same time Crash happened. So I saw Peter Davison in the story, and then I saw Peter Davison in that clip, and then the next year Davros comes back in like series four. So I'm like, that's the same guy. Mm. And then, so yeah, that really strengthened my fandom.
Yeah.
And I was a big fan of of the David Tennant era, like the RTD era as a whole. I really like the RTD era, but I was also like getting more and more into Classic Who. And it's weird, like over the years, it sort of evolved from like in 2009, like Peter Davison was my favorite Doctor because of that Resurrection of the Daleks thing. And then the early 2010s, it shifted to Tom Baker. Mm. And then around like midway through the 2010s, it shifted to Patrick Troughton, who has just been my favorite ever since. So,
Hence, you've got a much, it's weird. You're the youngest person I've interviewed so far, and you've got the widest spread of Classic Who. And other people are like, you know, some of them are my age, some of them are older. And they've got like, they've got New Who, they've got Classic Who, and you've gone, now I can live without New Who. So like, which one to go for first?
I do enjoy bits of Modern Who, but I'm not really a fan of the Moffat era, and I'm not really a fan of the Chibnall era either. But I do like RTD Who. It's just I prefer Classic Who. So that's why I love my choice of classics.
I hear you. As I was saying to you off mic, I've never watched the Aztecs. So you, a 24-year-old fan, has made this 50-year-old fan 47 years after I watched my first Doctor Who watch the Aztecs for the first time. And it's so weird going back to that era. But I've never watched the Aztecs. It's my own DVD. I've just never watched it. There's just I've got so many DVDs. So I finally, about an hour ago, I finished watching the Aztecs, and I can see why it's on lots of people's lists. A lot of people said, it was almost on my list. I didn't quite make it. So it's great that you've picked the Aztecs. I mean, what is it about the Aztecs that makes it one of your five?
Because when you posed me this question, there was a part of me that was like, pick my top five stories ever. And I still have sort of done that, but not exactly. Like one of the others in the list is definitely is my favorite story ever, but we'll get to that later. But the Aztecs, it's one of my favorite Hartnells. I think aside from maybe Dalek's Master Plan, it is my favorite Hartnell. But I chose it because it's probably the most formative of the Hartnell stories because, you know, it's a pure historical. It establishes, the fixed nature of time, how, you know, history must always stay on track. It's a character piece for Barbara. And it's a really like intricately designed story where like, cause you have four regulars, right? Like four members of the TARDIS team, and each of them explore like a different facet of Aztec culture. So you get Barbara, who's mistaken for a goddess. So she's at the top and you get, Ian, you know, he's the action man, so he gets to explore the warrior lifestyle. The Doctor, he's old, so he gets to explore, like, what the elders do, I guess. And then Susan, you know, she's a young girl. She gets to, I mean, she's not in it much, but, you know, she still explores like the facet of like what it's like to be a woman who, like a young girl who's betrothed, and like how rebellious she is to that as, you know, someone from a different, from a more advanced civilization, I guess. And it's a really interesting story, like exploring this culture. And, you know, as I said, it's very formative. It's very noteworthy in the show. And the ending is pretty bleak, like when Barbara realizes, no, I can't really change anything. And then it was like, well, you helped to save one man. And then she's like, yes. And then, you know, that's the difference that they, that she made. That's the good.
It really, I kept thinking of Fires of Pompeii when I was watching it, going, oh, this, you know, they did it on the, in the, they did so much just in the six, you know, in 1964, in the sixth adventure of the first Doctor. They were doing what's still making, entertaining people, that dilemma. And but it's so strange seeing the Doctor's character before while he's still in that original intention, which was to make him not quite a baddie, but he was slightly inspired by you know, by the Doctor in Lost in Space, who was a baddie. So he's not totally intended to be the central character, is he? And then Terence Dix later retcons him, and then we do get him saying, you know, never be cruel, never be kind, and all that later on, which makes total sense. But then you see William Hartnell, and he's like, yeah, we, you know, can you imagine modern Doctors just letting someone get sacrificed in front of them because you can't disrupt time? But it's just, you know, this is the same Doctor that would have, you know, would have brained a caveman with a rock, and all manner of other things. But it's just really interesting seeing the show, seeing the show in its early stages when they're still working out what it is.
Yes, seeing the development of the protagonist role, I guess, and how he comes into his moral.
And I'm always just amazed by Barbara, especially. Jacqueline Hill's just amazing.
Oh, of course.
Ian Chesterton was, I didn't realise, there's somewhere in his backstory that dude can fight. I don't know if it's National Service or whatever's in his backstory. But I just wrote in a big letter, I just wrote, Ian's thumb! Because he can do some crazy stuff just with a thumb. And he seems very confident against an actual bloodthirsty warrior from 15th century Mexico. I'm trying to think. Does he do that sort of thing often, or is it just for this story? He suddenly,
Ass. It depends.
He's always a bit of a daring do.
It depends on the story. Like sometimes he'll be willing to put up a like a, because again, like back then, obviously the Doctor was, you know, more of this thinker, more of this contemplative presence. So you needed like a big, strong, like action man on the side to like take care of the more like physical things, and Ian does do that a lot, like in the Crusade, in I think he might do it in the
Ring. I've seen him punching people and stuff, but this seemed to be some above and beyond, like he's but I guess you could just sort of that era, 1963, when did National Service was probably finished, depends how old he's supposed to actually be.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking, my dad was born in 1940, and he was the first year that didn't have to do National Service, and he did it anyway. So, but anyway, it's this is the show getting going, isn't it? So they probably haven't worked a lot of things out, which is half the fun of watching it, isn't it? Because, but then, do you find yourself laying over the top, like what we now know, 60 years of lore, like when they're talking about a bloodthirsty civilization and that's going to destroy itself, it made me go, oh, she's subtext there is she's thinking about Gallifrey. But obviously the actors can't possibly be thinking about Gallifrey.
Like they wouldn't know that back then, but obviously obviously the benefit of hindsight is good, like metatextual addition to that. So
no, I love that sort of stuff. It's like when somebody had a picture of William Hartnell in the junkyard looking at an old painting, and somebody said, "Would you know what that is? That's Gallifrey will fall no more."
Yeah.
Falls no more. So intricately plotted, Doctor Who. Totally. But anyway, So yeah, the Aztecs was an absolute pleasure to finally start watching. The how do you say his name? Tloxotl or Tloxotl, whatever his name is. Yutoxol, that's his name. The John Ringham, the actor. Obviously, it's very of its time when it comes to frowning at people's faces.
Yeah.
But which we must acknowledge. But yeah, but he was a generally good actor. Just absolutely brilliant. Obviously in Doctor Who a few other times as well. Smugglers and Colony in Space. According to my research, he was a really memorable, like absolutely brilliant performance, isn't he?
Yeah.
So what's your sort of for you, what's your sort of personal standout of the Aztecs?
Ooh,
other than the doctor accidentally gets engaged. It's a very horny episode. It's like somebody tries to marry Susan at the same time someone's trying to marry the doctor.
Yeah.
My
standout of the story is
most desirable TARDIS crew ever.
Yeah, it's probably Barbara's emotional journey, because you know, she as a history teacher knows what happened to the society. She's like, well, you know, I come from the future, I've come back in time, I have all this foreknowledge, I can probably shift their progress. I could save them. I could prolong this culture. I could like create more history. And then it was like, no, you can't do that. That's the way history went. And then Barbara has to accept that harsh reality. Mm-hmm. But she at least does save one person. And you know, that is very Fires of Pompeii, like in retrospect.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it is a nice middle ground, I suppose. Weird way to describe it, but yeah.
No, it's brilliant. Maybe you know better than me, but I'd love to pick up on Atlock and how he got on in the wilderness. Have they ever done? Has Big Finish done 10 box sets on that? What happened to the old guy going out into the wilderness? So do you listen to Big Finish much?
I do, on and off. Like I do have a lot of Big Finish, but my interest in the expanded media kind of comes and goes. It depends what mood I'm in. Like I am mostly, I think I'm for the TV show like above everything else, but I do like Big Finish. I do like the comics. I do like the books sometimes. So yeah, it depends what mood I'm in basically.
You're listening to The Bunker from Cutaway Comics, publisher of creator-owned comics based on characters and stories set in the Doctor Who universe. For more on Cutaway, visit cutawaycomics.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at cutawayuniverse.
So, moving on, I mean, you said you absolutely love Patrick Troughton, so your next two choices, Tomb of the Cybermen and Patrick's last, well, I'd say last, he comes back about 50 times, but his last one in the main role, The War Games. So what is it about Tomb of the Cybermen that makes it onto one of your five?
Well, Tomb of the Cybermen is my favourite Doctor Who story of all time. It just leaves me like stunned. I'm a big Cyberman fan basically, so it's commentary on, you know, the Cybermen, the characterization of the Cybermen, how they are desperate to survive by any means necessary, to the point where they'll freeze themselves and then like sort of hunker down and wait for like people to fall into their trap so they can build more of themselves basically. I really like that commentary. There's a lot of it almost plays out like a like an archaeological, like Egyptian, like pyramid exploration, but like a Cyberman version, because like you've got like there's like these effigies of like those entombed, and then there's these sarcophagus shaped things, and the Cybermats are almost like scarabs in a way, and I really like that. I really like that sort of like each room has its own danger kind of aspect to it. I think the Doctor, like Patrick Troughton's Doctor, is extremely like devious and cunning in it. I think he really, the way he plays Klieg and like Kaftan and sort of like subtly tries to get into their heads and, you know, figure out what they're trying to do. I like that. It's Victoria's second story. I'm a big fan of Victoria. I think she's one of Doctor Who's most underrated companions. A lot of people tend to sort of miss the point of her. They see her as just, oh, she's just a damsel. But like, there's a lot of, there's more to her than that. You know, obviously she is a scared, anxiety-ridden orphan. So there's precedent for why she's like that. Jamie's great. And it's just a cracking adventure. I love the way it plays out. And yeah, I think it's just, I don't know what else I can say, really. Yeah. Also just iconic for days.
I think the Troughton era in general is when, like we were just talking about, in, you know, they were just trying to work out what it was. Probably, you could probably look back and go, maybe for all of William Hartnell's run. Then they kind of, it's sort of almost like they hit the ground running with Patrick Troughton. Oh, we know what it is. He's an alien who changed his shape. And then during that period, they then decided to invent the Time Lords and really work out where he was from. They, like we were saying, they locked down his personality to make him the hero, to make him this kind do-gooder that could change time in little levels and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think William Hartnell is very important because if he'd been rubbish, then the show would have died. But Patrick Troughton is almost equally important because he was the first time it changed and they lost everybody.
I think they are both the most important.
They increased
doctors.
It.
I think it's a great, I think as a story, it's a great character piece for like our leads and the Cybermen. I think that's why I love it so much. And of course, it's got like this really icy vibe to it. I mean, literally, because, you know, they're in a big freezer, but I like that as well.
Yeah, no, it's a brilliantly atmospheric piece. And I grew up thinking I didn't like the Cybermen because I saw them in the 80s when I didn't mind, you know, I kind of watched them and didn't mind Earthshock and things, in fact, quite liked them, but I wasn't scared by them. I could see there were men in baggy suits.
Yeah.
And there was something weird about 80s Cybermen. I'd never liked them. But then when you watch the old ones, they're horrible. They are. You will be like us. And then I think that was one of the genius things that Moffat did with the at the end of Capaldi's run, when he made the Cybermen actually disturbing and body horror again. And I don't think they had been in between like old school for like 40 years, something like that. But it's great to be reminded of the Cybermen when they were truly alien and disturbing. But then on to the War Games, which, as well as, you know, we lose Patrick Troughton, other than all the other times he comes back, it also another one that changes Doctor Who forever. I love the War Games.
I love it as well.
Lots of people say it's too many episodes, but I'm absolutely perfectly. I like the epic nature of it.
Yeah,
I've never that it's 10 episodes, and
I'm
I never
really,
feel like I could.
I'm really kind of subversive for my age, because a lot of people my age, you know, they like short, snappy media. I could take anything with, just go as slow as you want. I'll take it. I like that. So I think the War Games is perfectly paced. I think a lot of Classic Who is perfectly paced. There's very few Classic Who stories that I think are too slow, honestly. There are a handful, but I think
I think people are always surprised when they watch a lot of Classic Who that it's not slow and boring, especially weirdly the older stuff. I think when it does start getting a bit badly paced is, you know, Colin Baker's era and things like that, when the budgets are going and, you know, no fault of the people involved in it really, but
yeah,
I think that's when maybe it gets a bit, you might go, Twin Dilemma's lagging a bit. But when you go back to the early ones, the first 10 years of it, 12 years of it, they're brilliantly paced.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. But War Games, I rewatched that after ages away from it, just maybe a few months ago, and it was just like, oh my god, this was like the Timeless Child twist of its day. This was like,
but good.
You know,
so
I'd love to speak to some like older fans and go, you know, what was it like getting all that brilliantly, you know, Time Lords. It's, and this is a hint of the Doctor's.
Yeah, it's past. Probably the
biggest. Finally, after like 6 years of.
Yeah, it's probably the biggest, most significant, most important status quo shift in all of Doctor Who. Probably more than the original, like first regeneration, maybe. Yeah? That might be controversial to say.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's just the way that the second Doctor's era, the Troughton era, it reaches this emotional culmination where, like, obviously the Doctor, all this time, he's, you know, he's been rebelling against the establishment, basically. Like, anywhere he turns up, he'll, like, stand up for the little guy, rebel against the oppressive establishment, you know, something like Macro Terror or something, I don't know. And then finally, at the end of the 60s, his people catch up to him, and then he stands up to them, his establishment, and he rebels against them and see, like, this is why I did this, because I, you know, I wanted to help those in need and you just stood there and did nothing. I think it's a really inspired move. And obviously, that's obviously the rest of the story, like everything leading up to that is exquisite as well. Like, you know, these battlegrounds, like the intrigue of how, like, you know, they'll be in one battleground and then they'll move into the next one. And sometimes things just don't add up. Like, what's this red coat doing in World War One kind of thing? And, you know, there's when they end up in, I can't remember what it's called, but like, you know, Warlord HQ or whatever. And the Doctor and the War Chief see each other and you see the gravitas in their faces. And it's like, oh, this is important. They know each other. And it's great. It's great for it's a great character piece for the Doctor and explores like why he does what he does. Jamie and Zoe, love them. It has like great characters like you know, the War Chief, the Warlord, Lady Jennifer.
It really is an amazing piece of work. I mean, Philip Maddock as the Warlord is just really freaky. Just brilliant. I mean, and again, like with a lot of Doctor Who, World War II is sort of, you know, that early, especially that early phase, you know, from the Daleks being Nazis. And then I think with the Warlord, you've got, he definitely has a sort of Gestapo vibe with his little glasses.
Yeah.
I mean, he kept me, you know, he looks like the Nazi guy from Indiana Jones, doesn't he? He's cut from the same sort of villain cloth. I do think Jamie and Zoe and the Second Doctor are sort of one of the best TARDIS teams of all time.
Oh yeah,
they're just it's weird how we don't actually get all that along with them, do we? But they're just so good.
Oh yeah,
and then the fact that they forget each other, that like somewhere out there, Jamie and Zoe don't know that they had all these adventures. It's which is also
crushing. It's crushing emotionally. Brilliant, nonetheless.
Oh, Zoe's so good. Yeah, I mean, they're all so good. I mean, yeah, I mean, have you? I've never met Wendy Padbury. Have you met Fraser Hines?
I want to one time? Day. I hope I do. I've met a few Doctor Who people.
He's a lovely guy.
Yeah, and I want to meet more sometimes. So
yeah,
hopefully I get on that soon.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. So I met Fraser in LA at Gallifrey One. The last one just gone, and I was there going, oh, I'm at a table chatting to Sylvester McCoy and Fraser Hines, and it was quite cool. It was but he's a genuinely lovely man, and the fact that Jamie from the 60s has now spawned Outlander, the books, which is now this huge Amazon program which Fraser's now in. It's the power of Doctor Who on PBS is now spawning Outlander, is because it's, you know, the main character in that's called Jamie as the direct result. But it's War Games is just unsurprisingly, because these are your five, you've got a lot to pick from, but yeah. But these first three are some of the best sort of black and white.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Classic Who ever, I think. But it's before we go into your second two choices, then I guess could just talk a little bit more about your sort of the animation that came to that drew you to my attention via Jenny was the Brigadier one recently. So if you could just tell people what that's about.
Well, hello everyone. I am Will Maddox. And I am an amateur animator. I've been animating for the last 10 years, usually like exaggerated cartoony stuff. Like I make my own cartoons called Maddox and Friends. But as a Doctor Who fan, I have occasionally used my animation skills to the benefit of, you know, making Doctor Who things. And sometimes they're just very silly. But very recently, I decided to take the opportunity to animate the first meeting between the Doctor and the Brigadier, because obviously it doesn't happen in the TV story, The Web of Fear. But obviously they meet for the first time in that story, but that the actual moment where they meet is not in the story because, you know, Pertram was on holiday. And then when the Doctor, you know, the Doctor goes off screen for like an episode, and then when he comes back in the next episode, he's being escorted by, you know, the Colonel, soon to be Brigadier. And it works great in that story because, you know, the Web of Fear is very mysterious and, you know, it's very like whodunit, very like you can't really trust anyone. So it works. But of course, some people are like, oh, why can't we see their first meeting? In the novelization of the Web of Fear, we do see their first meeting. And when I read that, I was like, huh, someone should make this sometime. I should make this. And then I did. So I animated it and I called it Friends to Be, because yeah. In the novelization, they're sort of like, there's a passage that refers to them. Like, it sort of talks about how they go on to be friends, but it's like, but for now, these two friends to be glared at each other with suspicion. I was like, aha, that's a good title. So I animated that. It's on my channel.
Yeah.
It's on my channel, Maddox Productions One, called Friends to Be. You can look it up if you want. And I'm hoping to do more animations like this. I'm working on one right now, actually.
We'll put links on the podcast notes. But what are you working on right now? Because when this goes out, you might have finished.
It is a 13th Doctor animation. What are you working on? Because even though like I'm not the biggest fan of modern Who as it stands now, I do still enjoy all of the Doctors to varying degrees. And I do still want to commemorate, you know, Jodie as she leaves. So I was like, you know, I'll just make a quick animated piece of Jodie. And that's what I'm working on right now. It's nearly done, actually. So it probably will be up by the time you post this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, your animation was absolutely gorgeous. And I mean, I don't want to spoil it, really, but it brings it all up to date, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, for the Brigadier, that is. Although...
I must also take this off.
I don't know about you. I love the Brigadier. Sorry, yeah. Go
ahead. I just wanted to quickly say I couldn't have done it without Cliff Chapman and Tony Filer, the impressionists I got in for the Doctor and the Brigadier, respectively. They do great work. Check them out on Twitter somehow. We'll put links below or
I was thinking of asking Cliff. He's another person who I follow on Twitter. I think we've got a lot, but I've never met him in real life, but he's great entertainment on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of audio stuff, so I'm sure I'll be working with him at some point. But yeah, I was thinking of contacting him as well to do one of these, because we're having a real good mix of you know, we've got Philip Hinchcliffe at some point, but we also want fans, and we've got our artists and writers that work for Cutaway, so we're getting a right mix of basically, as long as you can pick five Doctor Who fans, five Doctor Who stories, then we'll have you, kind of thing. Because it's such a big, wide, wonderful, silly world, isn't it?
It's competition time, and as we have Will Maddox as a guest, we have a copy of his fantastic Friends to Be animation available on very rare, very collectible DVD. Starring Cliff Chapman as the Second Doctor and Tony Filer as the Brigadier, it's an animated adaptation of the moment, never seen on screen, but depicted in the novelisation, of the Doctor and Brigadier first meeting in The Web of Fear. To be in with a chance of winning this DVD, simply answer this question. In The Web of Fear, what is the name of Professor Travers's daughter? Send answers via Twitter message to Cutaway Bunker's account or via email to cutawaycomics@gmail.com by the closing date of 31st of December 2022. Good luck.
So moving on to your next choice, I guess this does follow neatly from the War Games, because it's literally the episode after the War Games, which is Spearhead from Space, John Pertwee's first one.
Yes.
How many actual stories in between War Games and Spearhead from Space? Canonically, none, because these are the only two on TV. But there's lots, you know, until they say Joe Martin is actually the third Doctor or something like that, then, what Big Finish are doing with the sort of splinter second Doctor. But none of that's actually canon.
Yeah.
Just very near to canon.
Yeah.
And all good stuff. But
I like to think it just goes
as far as we know.
Yeah, I like to think it just goes one to the other. But obviously some other people have different interpretations, but you know how it is.
Well, I write for Big Finish and we're writing Cutaway, and things don't have to be canon to be entertaining.
But
when it comes to actual Doctor Who canon, can it be talked about in the TV show? The answer is no, unless it's been in the TV show. Anyway, I will go down that rabbit hole. As far as we're concerned, anyway, Patrick Troughton got his face changed by the Time Lords, and then he staggered out of a TARDIS as John Pertwee. And I watched this yesterday, and you know what? You're 24. I'm actually thinking I might not have watched it since you were born. So that was the last time I probably watched it on a VHS at university in about 1992. Were you born? And you were just about born. Yeah. So, Spearhead from Space, I liked it even more. Now it's older. It's weird. It's weird to sort of, it's almost like, even though it's got older, it's somehow the fact it's lasted and still looks amazing, even at this distance, is somehow even more impressive.
Yeah,
it's just a gorgeous looking thing.
Yeah, it's
so, and obviously you love it because it's on your list.
Yeah,
so,
it's not my favorite Pertwee story by any means. There are other stories I prefer, but it is a very formative story because it kicks off the Pertwee era. And you know, in this hypothetical scenario, I want something that represents what I think is like the best elements of Who. And I love the Third Doctor era. I love UNIT. Mm-hmm. And I think this is just a great representation of it. And it's a very stylish story. It's got a lot of, you know, suave 70s-ness to it, even though it was like made at the very end of 69. Yeah, I think it's a good story. I think the only thing it probably misses is me. I think the only thing my selection is missing is something with the Master, but oh well. But yes, it's a really good story. It, you know, I love...
Which Master would you go for?
Oh, Delgado, just instantly. it's good to see like Pertwee come into his own in that story. I really like the Brigadier early on, like you know, Weber Fear Invasion in season 7. I think the Brigadier is really great in all that. He's still great like in the rest of the show, but I think that's his peak. I think the Autons are very chilling villains. Liz Shaw, you know, she's brilliant as well. And as I said, it's just a very classy, very stylish story. It's just a very classy, very stylish story.
I was about to say, you say Victoria's sort of an underrated companion. I think Liz Shaw is totally under. She was cheated. Much as I love Katie Manning, we could definitely have had more Liz Shaw, I think.
I like
Liz
a lot.
Absolutely brilliant.
And
Spearhead from Space really is a really good showcase. She's absolutely, every scene she's in is absolutely brilliant. Like the chemistry between her and Pertwee is really good. And I think she's a good, really good foil, and something a bit different from, you know, here's a woman who just needs everything explaining to her. She was a little bit more than that, but she still needed stuff explaining to her because it's outer space stuff. I think Liz Shaw was. It's a real shame we didn't get more of her, because that season is just, you know, it's one of my favourite seasons, and a lot of it's to do with Liz Shaw, I think, and then Inferno. I love Inferno. When did you first watch Spearhead then? Did it scare you, or did you not see it as a child?
I think I did see it as a child.
You saw the sort of sequel to it as a child, didn't you, Rose?
Yeah, obviously I saw Rose. I think Spearhead was one of the earliest classics I saw. And it is, the Autons are quite unnerving in it. So it is it is up there, and it is a pretty chilling one, and it's a really good one as well. But yeah, that's why it's my Pertwee pick, because, you know, I want a representative for the first four Doctor's eras, because the first four Doctors are my favourite eras overall, basically. I think they're the most consistent. Yeah.
No, good choices. I think when Pertwee hits, that's when they really get into a Nigel Neal groove, don't they, as well? With the sort of which much to Nigel Neal's annoyance, but that mixture of science, and then they go into the occulty mix with science and aliens and ancientness. But just seeing Spearhead, you can just see why after Patrick Troughton, it's like, whoa, this has got some budget. This is in colour, and John Pertwee's brilliant. I mean, we get all of John Pertwee in this one, don't we? We get how brilliant an actor he is, how physical he is. I mean, when he's escaping in his wheelchair, and then we also get Gurning Pertwee with the tentacles.
Oh yeah,
when he's when the tentacles have got him and he's properly Gurning.
Yeah,
it's absolutely brilliant. But and like you say, and the Brigadier. And unit, and so much good stuff going on in there. Good choice, really good choice.
Something's coming. A threat like no other. It will take a team of the most unlikely warriors in creation to defeat it. The universe is depending on you. On you!
Coming soon from Cutaway Comics, Phase 1 of an epic new saga, Gods and Monsters. Issue 1, Faustine, Princess of Tharin, written by Stephen Gallagher, with art by Martin Geraghty. Issue 2, Sutekh the Heretic, written by Ian Winterton, with art by Adrian Salmon. And issue 3, Omega El Tralla, by Mark Griffiths, with art from the legendary John Ridgway. An epic clash of good and evil that threatens to rip apart time and space, coming soon. Follow us on Twitter at Cutaway Universe, or visit cutawaycomics.co.uk.
So, your final choice is possibly many people's favourite Doctor Who ever.
Yeah.
It's probably one of mine. It probably makes my top five. Is Genesis of the Daleks. Is that one of your genuine favourites?
Yes. It's not my ultimate.
When did you first see Genesis of the Daleks?
I think it was actually it wasn't one of the earliest I saw, but it wasn't one of the last I saw either, though. So like, I think it was one of like the middling ones I saw. And obviously it has this towering reputation of like the creation of the Daleks, the one that introduces Davros, the one that has this moral dilemma. And, you know, it definitely lives up to its reputation, I think. Obviously, it's not my favorite Tom Baker. My favorite Tom Bakers are Seeds of Doom and Horror of Fang Rock. But for this hypothetical scenario, I need something with the Daleks. And again, I want something like show defining. So here's Genesis. And as I said, it's and a fourth Doctor story as well. So obviously it's a moral dilemma that it proposes. Again, it's something about changing history. And then the Doctor's like, but wait, can I even do this? Can I really do this? You know, Sarah Jane's in it. Sarah Jane's lovely. Davros is my favorite individual villain in the Cybermen are my favorite monsters, but Davros is my favorite villain. And I think he gets off to a really great start. The world of Skaro is really vivid, and so are all the characters, like the Khaleds and the Thals. It is mostly the Khaleds, like Nida, and
the Thals just get massacred a bit at the end.
Yeah, it's just a very engrossing story. It's one of those stories where, because you get some Doctor Who stories where you like them, but like you don't really rewatch them often. But then you get these other stories where you could stick them on just whenever, and then it's like, yes. And Genesis is one of those for me. Like if you just stick on Genesis, I will watch Genesis. So yeah, it's just a great
one. No. I mean, it is a near perfect story. And it's also, it's, you know, it's Terry Nation actually for once in his life being told, no, that script's not good enough. I don't, that idea is not good enough. Go away. How about something about the origin of the Daleks? Ooh, that's got, and he actually starts writing. Yeah. Not just being, I mean,
radiation hack, and
but not just sort of, not just, no, because he's amazing, but not just phoning it in, not just going, here's an adventure on a planet and the Daleks are involved. He really goes to it. And then from that, he writes probably one of his best. I mean, he's written a lot of amazing stuff, but yeah, writes one of his best scripts of his entire career, I would say. And certainly the one that's probably going to be remembered.
Oh, yeah.
Is remembered because it's just, you know, there's hardly anything wrong with it. This is the one that non-fans can sit down and go, oh, I find myself drawn in to this episode. You know, so if my mum comes in, then she'll find herself, you're watching this. And then she'll start watching it and maybe sit down and carry on watching it kind of thing.
It's very atmospheric.
But it's yeah. And again, it's full of World War II. It's full of Nazis and it's a very British sort of it's very British view of the Nazis as well as but it's all there with the Daleks were inspired by all that awful conflict, and now here we see it makes total sense that they are a sort of genocidal youth. They're from that sort of fascistic race. But yeah, I mean, Davros is a funny one to debate. Like, would it have been better if we'd never seen him again?
That is an interesting question. I do like him in Resurrection.
Just because he's been slightly watered down.
Yeah. I love Resurrection. Yeah. It's my first classic. So
yeah.
I think my answer would be no, I want to see him again.
Yeah. But
like, I do get that he probably would be more impactful as a one-hit wonder, sort of like Sutek or one of those.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No. I mean, Resurrection of the Daleks is one of my favorites. It's I remember watching that and I was 12 years old and it came on TV. And so I was there going, do I still like Doctor Who? And then I was scared of the Daleks. I literally was watching it by myself upstairs. I was like, oops, I'm being scared of the Daleks because in Genesis, they're terrifying. They are like, they often don't get captured like this. They're used a bit too cheaply, you know, but when they're properly exterminating people and they are remorseless and unrelenting, there is something horrible about that.
Yeah.
And I think Russell T. Davis got that in the season one finale.
Yeah.
Like the bit where they go down satellite 5, they don't need to, and they go down and they exterminate everybody at the bottom.
Yeah.
That to me is
that's a great moment. Just like
the Daleks, being terrifying. But yeah, Genesis of the Daleks, without a doubt. Other than Davros and obviously the main cast, I mean Sarah Jane Smith. Did much of your childhood, did Sarah Jane Adventures play a part in your childhood?
A bit.
Something you were watching Doctor Who?
Old? It played a bit of a role. I never saw all of it as a kid, but whenever I could catch it, I did watch it and I did like it. but I wasn't like super loyal to it. I obviously tuned in for the Trickster episodes and when the Doctor would show up, and I think I was there when the show ended. I can't remember, but I liked it. Mm-hmm. I think the obviously with a challenge like this, there are some really painful cuts that you have to make. So there are like some characters and concepts that in this hypothetical scenario, I'll now be robbed of. So like, I don't have a story with the Master now. I don't have a story with Leela now. And Leela's actually my favorite companion, funnily enough. And I like Tegan as well.
Me too. Yeah.
I like Tegan as well. So I'm robbed of Tegan.
It just says everything about the show, that decades and decades of it, and there was, you know, it's really hard to pick your favorite stuff because there's always something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't particularly like the Colin Baker era, but I think Perry's amazing, you know, as a character and as an actor. I really, you know, she's brilliant. So there's always something to keep you watching.
Yeah.
But yeah, Leela is one of the best designed companions, even before you get to Louise Jameson being amazing, just because she's sassy, she's got a reason to not know anything, so she needs it explaining to her. But she isn't just a dolly bird. She's and also there's the humour of her undercutting the Doctor's pomposity and the ridiculousness of the sci-fi.
Yeah, it's a different. Why I think one of the main reasons why I love Leela so much is it's a different perspective on intelligence, because she is very smart. Mm-hmm. Obviously, she's not like, she's not educated, but she is smart, and you know she proves that a lot mm-hmm. by sometimes suggesting things that the Doctor outright misses, by having a lot of tactical knowledge about like how mm-hmm. to attack or like how to outwit someone. And it's a very like interesting way of exploring how intelligence isn't dictated just by how much you like are taught or something. It's also just like, you know, you can be smart without being. Yeah, but you get the point. I'd have thought there. See, I proved my own point there by trailing off. But yeah,
you are Leela.
I am.
You are a warrior of the 17. No, I've been lucky enough to work with Louise, and she's a genuinely magical person, like really inspiring. And I think you know, she was like that. She was wise in her 20s while Tom Baker was busy being, and I think that's why that there's that sort of chemistry there, because she, like Leela, she didn't take a shit and are best of friends now. But she didn't. She was like, "Yeah, fine, you're Tom Baker. I don't care." And then she was basically, "Tom, why are you still being? I'm leaving because I'm going to do some Shakespeare. You know, you should probably think about doing that."
Like Fraser. I'd like to meet her someday as well. So that'd be nice.
Yeah. No, she is brilliant. She's such a warm person, and also she. Because of Big Finish and everything, she really is like properly. She, some people you meet and they're like, "Oh, I was in Doctor Who, yes, but I don't like to dwell on it." But she is properly.
She embraces.
She loves Doctor Who. I think she's even said she wishes she maybe had done another season.
Oh, that would be great.
One more season of Leela. Oh God, it would. What we could have had. Leela and Horns of Nymon.
Hell yeah. And of course,
would have been brilliant.
Yeah, but of course, there are some like modern Who stories that, if this list were more if this selection were more expansive, I'd include something like Midnight or something like Dalek. Like, I think those are some great stories. So, modern just because I've chosen exclusively classic. Yeah, just because I've chosen exclusively classic Who doesn't mean that I hate modern Who. Like, I do like bits of modern Who. So, it's just I think classic Who is the ultimate.
No.
it's a
brilliant choice. It really is. And I mean, I think Genesis would probably make it onto my list. It's so hard though, isn't it? I've got to do this right at the end of it. Gareth from Cutaway is going to interview me, because I think Genesis will be on there, but then I do love Horror Fang Rock, and especially I love Talons of Wang Chiang.
Yeah, those are great. Those are great ones.
I could watch that over and over again. But anyway, it's been an absolute pleasure to talking to you, and I will.
Of course.
I will put all the links to you on the bottom, and tell your friends. And if you don't follow me already, follow Cutaway and follow us and everyone. If you listen to this, you probably already do. But yeah, it's been a pleasure to meet you, and tell Jenny she's got to come on.
You have been listening to The Bunker from Cutaway Universe. Your host has been Ian Winterton. Produced by James Steventon of Mamalan Productions. Gods and Monsters advert voiced by Brian Blessed. All music by Paul Phillips. For more on Cutaway and to buy online, visit cutawaycomics.co.uk or follow us on Twitter No Cutaway Universe.